Back on the field here with Dan Satora on Wake Up Call, DT.com with Rob Drummond, as always. Rob, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going, Dan?
I'm doing well. Happy to have you here. And you keep wearing that Eagles. I don't know what it is about it, but you stay true to your team, that's for sure.
I stay true to my team, and it's pretty warm because it's pretty cold outside. So you kill two birds with one stone.
Absolutely. And you don't want to kill any more birds in Philadelphia. Nice segue that you gave me there.
That's Chip, true.
Chip Kelly
yes.
says he doesn't want to be the coach. Goes back to Oregon. They chase after him. Who are you giving credit to for this? You know, when you look at the Eagles organization, who are you happy that stuck with him to get him on?
Chip Kelly's a good up-and-coming young coach, at the collegiate level, and I'm very, very glad that the Eagles organization was able to finalize the deal and get him in there. Will I think he'll do well? It's like, time will tell that. I think his style of up-tempo offense is going to be something that the NFL hasn't seen in a while, and once those players on the Eagles current staff can adjust to what it is he implements or brings into the game, I think they'll be pretty well. The defense now just has to step up and play like a team. That's the Eagle problem. The Eagles' problem right now is just organization and just playing like a team. And once they get that ship righted, they'll be fine.
And as far as this up-tempo offense, you would think that the Michael Vick of old would make sense in this. Do you try to keep Vick in this situation now that you have Chip Kelly, or do you let him go?
You know what, running a $100 million quarterback running that style of offense, is not going to last long, and that's a lot of money to pay for one man. But I think Michael Vick checked out a long time ago, and I told you that. When we were talking about through the course of the year. The simple fact that he doesn't like to take the hits, his attitude hasn't changed. His body language is still to the part where it's like, why won't everybody accept me now? Until that change, his career basically to me is over. So it's not worth the risk of spending that much money on that caliber of player at this point in his career. I figured either get a trade for him, get some value for him, or just let him go.
If you're Chip, do you look at the draft for a quarterback?
That's an interesting standpoint. I have to look at some of the candidates coming out. I'd have to wait to the wait to the Senior Bowl, and wait to the NFL Combine to see what type of players are there that can fit into the system I'm trying to run. Washington drafted a quarterback, RG3, and they designed a system around him. It's a very, very smart idea. The Eagles could possibly do the same thing because they're a very, very high-powered offense. But the Eagles' problems lie up front. Their offensive line was porous and very, very horrible this year. So they have to start right now by getting him a left tackle that's basically sturdy and can be a franchise left tackle for the next couple of years. So their most pressing concern right now, I'd say, would be the offensive line, especially left tackle. And if they can get value either via a draft or free agency and get them a left tackle, that's the first place they need to start, because that was the worst display of offense I've seen by a team in all my years of football. And I'm an Eagles fan. It was sad for me to watch.
When you see this team that obviously the offensive line went through a lot of injuries, you look at a left tackle in the draft, a guy that had one more year of eligibility mm-hmm. for Syracuse. He's a big Philadelphia Eagles fan, mm-hmm. hailing from that area. Justin Pugh, who is playing in the Senior Bowl mm-hmm. and doing something that hasn't been done before. There's two juniors playing instead of having all seniors this year. Mm-hmm. So when you look, and technically he was a junior for eligibility, when you look at a guy like Justin Pugh, because you've seen so much of him, do you think that he could possibly help this Eagles team out in that respect?
I definitely think he could possibly help this team out. You look at just take everything out of it, and you look at what Syracuse did this year on the ground, and as far as playing the game, they dominated on the ground. They dominated when it came to passing in the last half of the season. And anytime you look at an offense and it dominates a game, it's not the skill positions that's doing it. It's a guys up front, or what we call the hogs, or the strength guys, And they're the ones moving guys around, moving guys out of the way, and keeping guys out of the backfield and get to the quarterback. So right. You definitely have to look at a player of this caliber and a player at this time, depending on where he falls in the draft. And by where he falls in the draft, I mean Syracuse. The Eagles can get a lot of picks for a player like Michael Vick's caliber, so that's something they really, really have to look at, and something they really, really have to think about, because going forward, it's going to be a whole different regime now with the Philadelphia Eagles, and I guess a guy from Syracuse definitely could help them out a lot.
Yeah, I think a really depressing thing is that I feel that the Dallas Cowboys would be a team that would be somewhat interested in paying for a guy like Michael Vick, which is something that I think would just be more of a detriment to the team. But Jerry Jones does... He does go to his own beat, so.
No, Jerry Jones' beat is Jerry's own beat, so.
But when you look at a guy like Chip Kelly and you look at him going there, out of all the coaches that they were talking to, I mean, obviously there's a strong offensive mind that was in the game, Mike McCoy, who decided to go to San Diego. I mean, there's a lot of guys moving around. Mark Trestman came from the CFL and was very successful up there, had been an offensive coordinator before in the NFL. You know, other guys like Rob Chudzinski, who came from the Carolina Panthers, high-powered offense with Cam Newton trying to build it around him. Now he's trying to power the Browns. When you look at all these guys that have accepted their positions and you see Chip Kelly, are you happy with that as a Philadelphia alum?
It's too early to tell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As far as an initial hire, I'm happy with it because of the success that he's had at Oregon. You know, but it's like, this isn't college anymore. You know?
Yeah.
This is big-time, big boy football, and this is the pros. So it's going to be a different era for him. You know, the name hire, it's a good hire. He's a smart coach. He understands the game. He's got a different style of offense. You know, the defense really, it wasn't formidable, but it was good enough to win at the college level because his offense was so high-powered. So time will tell. You know, after his first year, I'll know a lot more about him and what he brings to the table with the Eagles, you know. But for right now, it's just too new to tell.
And some of these coaches are successful, some aren't. You know, you look at guys trying to come in like a Nick Saban, and you see that guy go back out. You know, you see Pete Carroll try before, and now he's successful again. You see a guy like Jim Harbaugh that's successful right away. Can Chip Kelly, in your mind, translate? I mean, this is a man that's coming across the country. He's going from a high-powered offense to an offense that didn't know where to go. This is a team kind of in shambles, as opposed to Oregon that in all of his 4 years there had 10 or more wins and was going into bowl games. So how does Chip Kelly fit into this area, knowing that he came from such a different environment?
For him to fit in, for him to be successful right away, he'll have to understand the dynamics and the makeup of a professional athlete. It's not college kids anymore. These are guys who are making, you know, anywhere up for the 10 to 20, 30, 40 million dollars, you know. Some guys, Michael Vick, making $100 million. So you have to find a way to be able to go in there and get these guys respect from day one. You don't get these guys respect from day one, you're going to have a struggle the rest of your career as an Eagles coach. But I think this guy commands respect, you know, and his former players at Oregon really respected him. You know, the community respected him. The Eagles respected him enough to go out there and give him basically two opportunities, you know, to come and sign there. So I think he's someone who's going to come in there and do a great job and maybe not start off on fire, but I think eventually with all the talent he has there and with his mind for the game, he'll be fine.
Being a running back, do you keep LeSean McCoy with the Eagles? I mean, I think we can both agree that he's been underutilized. Mm-hmm. I think that's an understatement. Mm-hmm. Do you keep him?
That's something we talked about earlier in the year also, because the other running back who came, he just came on like gangbusters the second half of the season when McCoy was hurt. But I say for at least 1 year you keep McCoy and you give him a chance to go out there and prove himself as a football player, to prove that he is the caliber of running back, the caliber of player that you brought in there that did the things magically the year before. So he definitely deserves the respect and the right to have a chance to go out there and prove it within 1 year, whether 2 years, that he's the back that's definitely for the Philadelphia Eagles.
You sure you don't want Chris Johnson from Tennessee?
No, you can keep Chris Johnson from Tennessee. That's okay. We'll pass on him. If I did fantasy football, I'd definitely pass on him and go with someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that we definitely talked about him. And Calvin Johnson, out of the two Johnsons, ended up showing up. So
yes,
maybe he listened to the show. Who knows?
Probably, but possibly.
That Madden curse, he definitely, you know, I'm not a person that believes in curses. But if anybody that does, I think that they can understand that curse was broken this year.
Correct.
When you look at, you know, switching gears here and coming to Syracuse, all the changes that have been going on, when Scott's bringing in this staff, he's had to bring in, obviously, a lot of guys because Marone has purged the staff, so to speak. For or against the fact that Marone has done what he's done and has come in waves to take these guys?
You know what? Yeah, how can you fault him? Because at the end of the day, Doug has to do, in Doug's mind, what he thinks is going to make him and the Buffalo Bills successful, because he's not with the Syracuse University Orangemen anymore. You know, and change is sometimes a good thing. You know what? So Doug took sought out and took the guys that he thought would best make the Buffalo Bills, which is his current team now, the most successful team in the NFL or going forward. You know, so, you know, Syracuse can't be mad. They can't be angry. You know, it changes all the time. And we're not the only university or school that does it. Many other major other universities and schools across the country do it. You know, so it's something that happens all the time. You know, we're just taking it a little bit personal because it happened to us. But, hey, life moves on. Get the new guys you have in there now. Get them up to speed and get them ready to go out there and have a great 2013 season.
Are you surprised that he took the guys that basically he came in with a lot of these guys and took them right out? Are you surprised that the Buffalo Bills allowed him so much freedom? Because it seems like with some of these, so, you know, I mean, and Chip Kelly's left to be seen, and some of these other guys are left to be seen, but it almost seems like Marone had free reign, which I have not seen be a norm for the NFL, that you hire someone in their first year, especially someone that's never been a head coach before in the NFL, and allow them to basically fill their entire staff with a lot of people that they knew.
You know, well the Buffalo Bills is a sinking ship going down. So right about now, you know, Doug Marone may have been a life preserver, but, you know, they allowed him to go out there and throw out many more life preservers so these other coaches can help them. I mean, truth be told, come in, and no disrespect to any coach or head coach or anything out there, coaching is not hard. It's not hard at all. It's understanding your players. It's understanding a system. It's understanding the environment of what it takes to be able to go out there and win. And by win, I just don't mean not going out there and winning games. I mean going out there and winning the community. So finding a way to go out there and getting people to like you when it's a situation where it's a bad situation. So I say that from experience. You know, in my 15-year pro experience, my 4-year college experience, you know, and my playing since I was 5 years old up until I was almost 40, you know, I understand the dynamics and the makeup of a game. The coach is basically just there as a headpiece. And Doug understands the games, he knows the X and O-ing, and he can put those guys in the best position to be successful, but he also has to make those guys understand that you have to play a certain way to fit a system, because I studied this, and this is what these guys are going to do, so we're trying to give you a heads up already. Buffalo's never had that before, and the coach I saw. And with Doug, he definitely has a way, like he did with Syracuse, of changing the culture. When Coach Robinson was here at Syracuse, it was zombies walking around campus. You know, he let the convicts, you know, rule the entire prison. Whereas Doug came over, he took control. He wanted order. You know, he wanted style. He wanted grace. He wanted respect. And he taught these players how to be respectful, not just to themselves, but to the community. And that's why they started winning. That's honestly why they started winning. For some reason, somehow, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a miracle, but the Buffalo Bills saw that in him. And he brought with him coaches on his staff, you know, now that were former Syracuse University coaches that can bring that attitude back to the Buffalo Bills. And I think Buffalo Bills, they may start off bad in the beginning, but I think they're going to turn a lot of heads next year because of the coaching style that Doug brings them.
When you bring on a running backs coach like Tyrone Wheatley, who I felt like is definitely deserving of being in the NFL and has spent his good amount of time in the NFL when he was playing at running back and upset me in a lot of fantasy things. If you're listening, Tyrone, I appreciate that. But when you look at Coach Wheatley and what he had at Syracuse, that Buffalo was his area to recruit, that was his place, now he's there. Is this kind of a coming of full circle because Buffalo wasn't always well responsive of him, but now they have to be?
I mean, they have to be responsive of him now for the simple fact that he's good at what he does. You know, at the end of the day, he's very, very good at what he does. Look what he did with the Syracuse University running backs. Not that they weren't talented, because they were very, very talented, but to take talent and to manipulate talent to where they can play together and all be happy with the playing time they're getting and all be successful is something that's very, very hard to do. If you took a step back and look what he did with all the talent he had back there, and they give those guys the amount of playing time they want and the stats that they had during the course of the year, that's very, very talented by a coach. And it wasn't the players just running in themselves. It was him systematically putting them in at certain situations at certain times during certain games, you know, to be successful. And that was a great job. And I think what he has now, especially with that special back and C.J. Spiller out there in Buffalo, he's going to have a lot of fun with him, because now Tyrone can just go out there, just be relaxed, and Buffalo has to embrace him for the simple fact that he's good at what he does.
How much do you feel he's learned from his time at Syracuse? Because it seems that as games went by, and even when a season is split as time went by, if any time you thought, hey, this guy doesn't get it, this staff doesn't get it in general, Tyrone really, to me, seemed to get it. He seemed to understand it, and he could institute different packages. He knew when to put guys in, and it went from Jerome runs for 2 first downs and they take him out for Prince to if Jerome was running, they left him in.
Yes.
And so it's almost like, and we've said it before, coaches don't like to be wrong, but it's almost like this is a coach that was willing to admit to himself when he's wrong, willing to adjust, willing to fix and ad lib, and I think that that's going to make him successful.
You know, for me personally, and all I can do, ever really do is speak about myself because I'm the one I know, because I've lived the same situation and lifestyle that they're going through. I always sit here and say, you know, if I were to ever coach, I'd be a great coach, not for the simple fact that I think I'm better than anybody else or I think I'm, you know, the hottest commodity or the hottest thing out there. It's a simple fact that I take a step back all the time and I can stand down and I try and understand. I try and understand the situation. I try and understand the distance. I try and understand the down. I try and understand everything there is about the possible next play coming up before I even worry about the play. You know, and that's what Tyrone does. He tries to sit there and figure out every situation from, you know, the abilities of the running back to the whether it's a third down, whether it's a fourth down, whether the back is tired, the weather conditions, you know, for every individual athlete out there has their strength and has their weaknesses. You know, and for a coach to understand that the player's strength and weaknesses, he can always put them in a position to be successful. And Tyrone understands that. You know, plus he comes from a football background anywhere, where he played at Michigan, you know, played with the Giants, you know, so he understands the game of football. And when you understand the game of football and you become what I call a matrix, you can just see things before they even happen. It makes the game go that much easier. He's a very, very, very good running back coach. And Buffalo got like Jim when he got him. You know, it was sad to lose him. You know, but it's like, you know what, I always say at the end of the day, he did what's best, what he thought was what was good for him and his family, and I can respect that.
Speaking of his family, his sons playing the sport of football, obviously, as well. What do you know about them and how successful you think they can be?
I know TJ, his oldest, who's a sophomore. I never had a chance to coach him, but I mean, I trained him, I worked with him, got to meet the young man very well. Terrius, I coached on my Pop Warner football team a couple years ago, who's a phenomenal athlete, exceptional kid, you know, he's going to be good. Tyreek's the youngest. he's got five kids, he has two other girls also, you know, but Tyreek's only in eighth grade, you know, they're up and coming. But they all, you know, just sitting there saying, definitely have Division I potential coming. They're Division I athletes. You know, they're big, they're strong, they're athletic, they're gifted. You know, their problem right now is going to be working on the mental phase of the game because athletically, so many things come easy to them. And I've seen athletes like that before, that they take plays off and they don't feel they have to work that much harder just to stay ahead of everyone because they're so far ahead of the curve right now at such a young age that, you know, to them it's just a world of just like, this is easy to me. But, you know, eventually one day they're going to get a mindset where it's like, all right, this may be easy to you, but it's like, no, it's going to get harder.
Yeah.
You know, so in order for you to stay ahead of the curve, you're going to have to work that much harder. But you know what? That right now, it comes with youth. They're young right now, very, very young-minded, you know, and as they grow and as they mature more, I think it'll kick in. TJ right now is starting to learn what it takes to sort of possibly become that next level of player because he's really starting to work that much harder. He's got the size. He's 6'6", about 250, 260 pounds. Runs like the wind. Got great hands. He's one heck of an athlete. And Terry, as a freshman, is probably a better athlete than him. But the baby, all the boys, is better athlete than all of them. So it's going to be it's an interesting dynamics, I'm pretty sure, in that household. But, you know, I think Tyrone and his wife both have done a fine job with those young men, you know, and I wish them all the best going forward.
Well, you know, I think, you know, whether or not there's NFL careers and professional careers for all of them, I think this would definitely make for, the way we're describing it, a good show on like a Bravo channel or something like that.
That household must be something else.
I mean, it's very interesting to see that dynamic of families. It reminds me of Queth Dwayne, who played for Syracuse basketball, mm-hmm. the fact that his family was all in Division I, and they said that his sisters were better than any of the guys that were on the team and on any team. And so I think, you know, that makes a big statement for them, and it's funny because I've been around families that was a little bit different. They all played soccer, mm-hmm. but there were four kids in total, and the oldest was good enough to play D3 in college, but as you went all the way down, the youngest at 10 years old at that time was better than anybody else, was scoring more goals than anybody else, and they would actually move him to defense at a certain point in the game because he had scored so many that now they were trying to teach him how to do everything. And it's funny how you see that your older siblings essentially are pushing you mm-hmm. to be better than even they are, and they have all that success. We're talking about 6'6", 250 plus, and then you're talking about the youngest being the best athlete, you know. And so I think that, you know, you're definitely leading by example when you have a Brady Bunch type of family.
Yes. Correct, I agree.
Now, looking back at Syracuse, Schaefer hires a few other people. He gets DeAndre Smith from New Mexico, mm-hmm. running backs coach. He brings in Clark Lee to be his linebackers coach. Chuck Bulla was obviously announced as defensive coordinator. George McDonald comes out officially as offensive coordinator. And then you have Tim Lester as the quarterbacks coach. Being familiar with Scott, in conversation, has he ever brought up these guys? Were these guys known to you beforehand, or is this new to you as it is to some people?
I mean, I didn't know him beforehand, but knowing Scott, I think Scott knows that he really can't change the status quo, so he's got to bring in coordinators and got to bring in coaches that are basically going to keep things maybe not exactly the same as they were last year, but exactly to the tune or to the, you know, to the drive that basically got them to the Pinstripe Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to change up too much because you don't want to change. I mean, if it's not broken, why are you trying to fix it?
Yeah.
That's basically what I said. But you know, knowing Scott, and I think he made the right choices. He made the right choices with Syracuse University because he believes in Syracuse University. That's one of the reasons I thought that he was the best hire possible that was out there. You know, so I mean, the more you keep things the same, the more these kids can be relaxed, go out there, and just play the game of football. Change happens. You know, people have to get that. You know, and here's the thing: just give the guys a chance.
Yeah,
you know? That's all you have to do. It's like, you know, we can sit here as fans, you know, because I'm a fan now, not a player anymore. I'm a fan, analyst. I can talk about the game. But you know what? You never know unless you give them a chance. But right now, I'm willing to sit back and just give these guys a chance to be able to go out there, you know, and either prove us wrong or prove us right. But you know what? Give them a chance.
Being a hire from Doug Marrone, are you surprised that with Doug leaving for Buffalo that Dr. Gross made the decision to keep Scott and to bump Scott up instead of going outside?
It was the smartest thing he could have done. I mean, if he I think for the first time he understood that, you know what, to go outside and get a sexy hire, a big name coach, or someone, and at this point, at this very fragile, you know, mindset of Syracuse University sports, or I should say football, would have been disastrous. It would have been the Greg Robinson era all over again. You know, so I'm thankful that he went up there and hired someone that gave this team stability, because I said that before the hire even came on. What Syracuse needed at this point going forward was stability. From the way they started and how they had that great year, because they turned it around at the Louisville game, you know what, they had stability from that point. To have shaken that up right there, they would have went right back to square one. So, I thank him for giving this team stability and giving us Scott Schaefer.
Scott making the decision, from my conversation with him, that they're not going to seek out a recruiting coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to more or less hire from within.
Mm-hmm.
Good decision, bad decision on Scott's part that there isn't someone who's dedicated 150% just to recruiting coordinator, but essentially is going to have to be a coach and be that coordinator.
I mean, that depends on the dynamics, because there's some college kids that, you know, all right, you see a recruiting coordinator, but, you know, you say to yourself, okay, you know, you're not a coach on the team, granted, you're the recruiting coordinator, but you're not involved with the daily workup and dynamics of the football team.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, so if I get there, so you basically, I won't know you, so, but I can only go off my experience. You know, when I went to Syracuse, Randy Etzel recruited me all the time, but he was a running backs coach, so I knew I'd be dealing with him all day, and I formed a relationship with him, and I was like, great, I'll be able to see him all day and be relaxed and be okay. Ivan Ferris was a receiver coach, so they were recruiting me as a receiver also, you know. I knew I would see these guys all the day. With a recruiting coordinator, you really don't see them in the daily aspects of the day in college. And when you're a young kid and you go to college, I mean, like, the best thing for you is just to get adjusted, is to see familiar faces. And if you're not seeing a recruiting coordinator all the time because he's out there on the road and he's not coaching you, you're always like, you know what, they brought me here and they just fed me to the wolves, and you know, there's no one here to basically, you know, give me a line or give me a life preserver to help me. You know what I mean? Like, when I would see Randy Etzel, I would smile. When I would see Ivan Ferris, I would smile. When I would see all the coaches that basically recruited me, and these were coaches, it would make me feel like they really, really wanted me, and you know, and I was at home. So there's some pluses and minuses to having a recruiting coordinator. For some guys, that won't mind. For someone like me, it was very poignant that I had a coach that was a recruiting coordinator.
The recruiting coordinator right now, still unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Moore, you play with him, mm-hmm. You know him, he's a friend of yours. Is Rob the best option at recruiting coordinator?
Hard for me to say. I mean, if I sat here and said yes, it'd be because I knew Rob. I know Rob. I know what he's capable of. I know the type of person he is. I know his personality. I know how kids are great with him. And saying that going forward, I don't know these other guys. They may be just as good. But right now, if I had to say Rob was the best candidate for recruiting coordinator, I have to say yes, because of the intangibles that I know about him.
Now, when you look at this area that Coach Adkins goes into, that John Anselmo goes into, when we're talking about a tri-state area and we're talking about the talent there, mm-hmm. when we're bringing up the Northeast, when we're bringing up New York, when we're bringing up New Jersey, how important is it for Syracuse to have a chokehold of this area?
I think it's very important for Syracuse to have a chokehold from this area, but from me being a personal trainer, owning my own business, looking at an outside in, I'd have to say as it's not so much as Syracuse's fault for not recruiting this area heavily. I think it's more of the trainer's fault and the coach's fault. We need to start developing our athletes a lot better than what we're doing. You know, so some of the emphasis should fall on us also. You know, I look at schools across the country. I look at the Alabamas, the Jerseys, you know, the Texases, the Californias, and all these athletes are getting recruited by all these big schools. And I watch these young kids on TV, whether it be the Under Armour game, some of these national televised games, and their athletes move at a different speed than our athletes. They truly do. You know what? So as a strength coach, you know, and as a personal trainer myself, I have to apply techniques and I have to do things now to put our athletes at that caliber or at that level. So now the Syracuse will come knocking at the door, you know, the Penn States will come knocking at the door. Some of these bigger schools now will notice the tri-state, the Syracuse area, the central New York area, I should say. So it's a two-way street where we both have to take this and do put in the same amount of time to make our athletes better. They have to do a better job of recruiting our athletes here. We have to do a better job of training them and preparing them to go to that next level.
Is it more important for Syracuse to go after the states that Marone talked to me about, Georgia, the Carolinas, Florida, and you look at California as well? When you look at all of those, and then you look at the argument of you have to be in the tri-state area, which one to you is more important? Is it the Georgia, California, Florida, Carolinas, or is it tri-state?
Who played the national championship college football this year?
Alabama.
Okay, man, and Notre Dame. Okay, where are the majority of athletes from? Alabama, Georgia, Florida, you know, all the bigger areas. Answers your question. Yeah. You know, until we get our athletes here in the tri-state, New York, New Jersey, you know, Pennsylvania, you know, until we get our athletes after that caliber, being athletic like that, we have no one to blame but ourselves. You know, and that's its parents, that's its educators, that's its personal trainers, that's its strength coaches. You know what? In order for us to get to that level where we have players of their caliber, we have to train them and prepare them for that. And that's our job as parents and educators, trainers, you know, and counselors, teachers, whatever you want to call it.
What you're doing right now and how you're training now and who you're training right now, mm-hmm. Is there anyone that you feel has that caliber to go to a Division I school?
Oh, until we just lost him, Tyron Wheatley. Tyron Wheatley Jr., I should say. But there are a few athletes right now on the Fayetteville Manly's football team that are freshmen, that definitely freshmen and sophomore, that definitely have a chance of playing at that next level. You know what I mean? But, like, you know, the one thing you can't change, the change as a trainer or anything, is something that God instills in all of us, and that's the ability to be able to grow and get bigger. Yes, you can get bigger, but God's going to give you your height, he's going to give you your size, and he's going to give you your muscularity. You know, the best that you can do is just go out there and work as hard as you can, you know, and I'll try and go out there as an educator and trainer myself and trying to find what it is in the water in Alabama, Georgia, or California, all these other places that make these athletes go like they do. But at some point, you know, God-given ability is what's going to take over. And that's what I'm trying to instill these kids by giving them the confidence to be able to go out there and just do well. And yes, you'll see some surprising things from some of the athletes, especially in the Fayetteville Manlius football team the next couple of years, because it's a special group of kids.
So you're basically trying to take the God-given ability and just target it at something.
I'm trying to take their God-given ability and instill in what I learned, what made me successful for 15 years as a pro, you know, and teach them what it is that I learned to get me to the level that I stayed for so long.
I appreciate it. As always, we open up a lot of doors, so we'll have plenty to talk about coming up. But I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Dan.